First of all, thank you very much indeed for coming to. My name is Mike Iles. I'm the Executive Alliance for Safe Online Pharmacy in Europe, joined by a number of colleagues here. First of all, I would really like to thank ICANN for moving the meeting today. As you know, there was some controversy over the very, very grateful that we've had this opportunity. Therefore, registries and registrar people, very much. Patient safety, very important. It requires collaborative and proactive actions. So please do consider how you could give us your ideas and how you could actually help. Hopefully by the end of this session, some of the gremlins, the fears that you may or may not have will be dispersed, because whilst it is a common area that we're grappling with and we're dealing with all together, that we can actually make a difference. Now, I'd like to make some introductions, if I could have them, joined by a number of colleagues. Marty from the National Association of Board Pharmacy. Marty, really interesting insights into a particular... Laney, over here. She is Alliance for Safe Online Pharmacy Global. Marjorie, who's... we're at the front, which is better than perhaps being able. So thank you for that, Marjorie. And she's got John Horton, who's the president of LegitScript. He is here too. And indeed, just a little bit on the Alliance for Safe Online Pharmacy. A community interest, not for an European remit. And a number of observers try and make the internet a safer place by medicines. We would dearly like more members, because together we can. Bailey, who right from the beginning has been a great steward as well. Giovanni Seppia's also like, we are part of your community. And I really like to stress, we are here to work collaboratively and to work together. Your input and ideas today are going to answer those questions, but even more importantly. So we're all about voluntary. See some of those today, and hopefully you'll agree we are making a difference. Next slide.
We're going to tag team here. My name is Marjorie. Yes. Yes. If people are in the hallway, please come on in. We can fit some more in around the side and up front. We have co-presenters if anyone wants to jump up here. I'm trying to get as many people as possible speaking in one time. Please come on in. There's an escape hatch here, so you won't be locked in if you come in. Don't worry. So my name is Marjorie. I'm from the Center for Safe Internet Pharmacies. And on our board has been Neustar, Rightside, and GoDaddy, who were with us starting in 2010. We are the U.S. entity that started a lot of this coalitional work that now we've grown into Mike's organization in the EU. And one of the things I wanted to start with talking about is this idea of voluntary initiatives, which, you know, has become quite the topic for this ICANN, frankly, why it matters. And when we were founded in 2010, we were a lot of internet intermediaries, so meaning we're registries and registrars, we're credit card companies, search engines, at payment processors and shippers. And so it looks like a lot of the other coalitions that I see that you have in place, things that you're doing. Why this stood on its own was a matter of, and we'll talk a lot about the data around this, but it had to do with patient safety. It was that, you know, in the EU, they're tracking about, or globally, about 100,000 deaths a year related to the issue. So there's the patient safety issue. And the other was that we saw with our member companies that in simply changing the terms of use, how they set up their business practices, it became very easy to address you. It wasn't quite the lift everyone thought it would be. But I think one of the things we want to know first and foremost is that it's sort of the Wild West, as you know, in a lot of these industries. And a lot of this has been us coming together to figure out how to problem solve in this area. There is no one right answer yet. And that is why, one, this has become a very important global issue. Because without all of our companies and different industries working together on this issue, it's, you know, almost impossible to solve and really address. But we have seen over the course of what has now been 4 years of our organization a lot of successes. We have seen things that have definitely worth the issue or worth the work, and that collaboratively we have been able to make a difference. So again, you know, we are here with you and talk with you and problem solve around this issue, and we'll share what we've done so far and a little bit about what we know about this particular issue space of prescription medicine. Three things that we're focused on, and the first is the voluntary action piece of what we do. Our organization has been a principles of participation. So we have set up best practices essentially for all of the various industries involved in our organization to what we see that works and also what we can all agree we can do. And a lot of that is just simply changing terms of use, setting up policies so that you have a little bit of control over who you're doing business with. The second has also been a lot of collaboration. So we've been doing a lot of cross-industry collaboration. And this has looked like In the U.S., we've worked with the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration. We collaborate with the White House offices. We work with all different kinds of organizations, really, because I know this will come as a surprise to you. Governments aren't always super efficient, don't always understand what we do. And so a big part of that has been educating all of the different players in this marketplace about, for example, what it means for you as registries and registrars to try to run a business and not make the requests and the things that are transpiring unreasonable and undoable. So facilitating understanding across industry. And the third has been a lot of consumer education. And we hear this everywhere we go. Law enforcement bodies from everywhere from Asia to the U.S. has been, until consumers understand the issue, we can't end this problem. So we have to educate them and make sure they also understand where the responsibility lies with them and what the real issues are. So that's our work. Can you go next slide, please? Mike, where'd you go? I'm going to let Mike speak to a little bit about what we know about this.
I won't drown you with facts, but I think these are fairly 97% of online drug sellers, 94% don't have a verified pharmacist behind. More than 90% do not require a prescription. Go online and you don't need a prescription. WHO, World Health Organization, reports seal their physical address are false. European Alliance for Access to Safe Medicines did a report over 30 medicines from a variety of online. Then at the Royal College of funded the packaging that arrived. They then sent to see what was inside of them. And 60 curious, which is a pan-European market, 5 countries with 1,000 online per country, and they asked various percent of Europeans have actually bought. European population is a lot of growth. So Marjorie's point about educating on side, the people that are going online do this, sometimes unwittingly, some 5% of 319 million US, that's 79 million people who are going online and risking per side of their national health systems. How big is the problem? Next slide, please. 30 to 40,000 fake you and I at any given moment. Sire a prescription and you will be free, not just lifestyle drugs. That's the issue, guys. Next slide, please.
And actually, let's go ahead to the next slide, if you don't mind. So I just want to explain a little bit about who's here in the room and why we're speaking to you. We're all coming at this from different angles and different approaches. Our organization is intermediaries, so we're all companies. And then we have the National Association of Boards of Pharmacy, which in the U.S. is the only certifying body for pharmacies. And I'm going to let them tell you more about who they are and now how they're actually playing in the registry space. The Alliance for Safe Online Pharmacies in the U.S. also represents patient. I'll let them speak for themselves as well. But pharmaceutical companies, patient care groups, and again, a lot of other collaborators, nonprofits, and healthcare companies of different sorts. In the EU, we're sort of all one big family of organizations through ASOP EU. But again, all of us coming at this from a different angle, and obviously we've got John Horton here as well, who has been a player in helping us actually understand and identify and navigate the laws and the issues behind the scenes. So that is why and who we all are, and again, want to be available to talk to you about this from all the different... CSIP, just again, this is the organization. I've already really spoken to this, but just to reiterate, these are on our board right now. All of our companies follow the patient document that I spoke to and that we all agree to follow certain policies. And we'll John Horton speak a little bit more to the policy issue. But again, what we've seen across industry and also what we're seeing globally is that the ability to set up clear-cut policies for a company or any one of our board members is really the make or break in our ability to do any liability and coverage for doing anything. And so, you know, again, we're seeing also around the world, certain countries don't have in place the kinds of laws that allow us to really play meaningfully there. But in the U.S., we unequivocally had very clear laws around this, but we also know that U.S. consumers don't really know. I'll speak to this personally. I come from a medical family of physicians who did not understand as they were going online. I had my father call me and do surgery for his department, and he said, so Marjorie, you work on this pharmacy website thing. I put in like 10 different ones. How do I know which one's legitimate? This is a man who is prescribing prescription drugs for patients on a daily basis. And I've talked to medical schools as well. They do not educate doctors. Doctors are largely, there's a gap in doctor understanding of this issue. There's a giant gap in patient understanding. And we also have research that we are happy to share that will be coming out very shortly, reiterating this issue of that most of the patients that are shopping on these websites are highly educated. They have health insurance coverage. And they're not who we might think are the buying from these websites. It's a little aside. Okay, slide, please. Success. We have seen success. Collectively, we've shut down 9.6 million sites, ads, shipments, transactions that would have been related to illegitimate online pharmacies 2014 alone. Next slide, please. And the collaboration that we're doing is that we are regularly talking to all of these different bodies. Again, from coming at this from many, many different issues, from law enforcement, from policymakers, but we found that being involved in the conversation is a heck of a lot more effective than waiting to be informed later. And what we've seen also is our ability to educate policymakers, our ability to educate law enforcement. Law enforcement largely acknowledges we can innovate faster than they can. And again, why all of our collaboration really matters. And a lot of what we are all trying to do here is figure out how to innovate around this space with you. So we host annual roundtables, typically in Washington, D.C. with our organization. We will have a meeting in December, which is going to be largely focused on consumer education and visibility around this issue. Anyone who wants to attend, please find us, and we'd happily have you join. Again, all about that information sharing and transparency. With you. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to John Horton.
Next slide. Well, nice to meet all of you. I know many of you. John Horton, president. First, I just wanted to tell you a little bit about us. We actually do have an office here down the street in Dublin. About 65 people. Aid Chic runs our office here in the EU. We mainly focus on the internet pharmacy interactions with domain name registrars and registry. Really, what we focused on are the domain names, the websites that are solely or primarily used to sell prescription drugs. And by the way, before I forget, there's some handouts outside of the door. A few months ago, we developed an internet pharmacy informational guide. There's sort of three parts to it. One page is a cheat sheet. So if you're abuse or compliant, to know how can I do a quick assessment of whether an internet pharmacy flowchart. There is a second document that is more extensive and provides a lot more information, tries to answer questions over the years. And then there's a country by country, one page for each country. It's about 20 countries. Those are the countries that rogue internet pharmacies most often target, and it just synthesizes the laws and regulations. That is meant to be a complimentary resource for you to use if it's helpful. And then there is also another document that talks about the free assistance we provide. Introducing ourselves, I should probably answer the question, well, wait a minute, if we're a company and we provide free services to registrars and registries, how do we make our money? Well, we work also with Google and Bing, for example, to monitor their ad space, Facebook, Twitter, Visa, and so forth. And that monitoring and compliance service is a paid service in those contexts. But we've made a commitment to the registrar and registry industry to try and offer a free and complimentary service just so that run into issues. It's never about a matter of, well, we wanted to ask LegitScript, is this a legitimate internet pharmacy or not? But that commitment to the community continues. We've got the world's largest database of internet pharmacies, and there are always new ones coming online. Classify them in three ways. First, what kind of products? Are they in fact selling prescription drugs? If so, we call it an internet pharmacy. Second, is it legally or not? And we basically put those into three categories. One is legitimate. There are legitimate internet pharmacies out there. Some countries allow them. But the criteria we use is, if you're point A to point B, country one to country two, operating legally in both countries. And, you know, our overriding principle that I'll be talking about a little bit more is, world, if you're engaged in the practice of pharmacy, you have to have a pharmacy license, a pharmacy registration, reciprocity, some sort of legal authorization. Coming back to that. So there are some that are legitimate, unfortunately only about 3% of the market. And then we divide the illegal ones into basically two categories. One we call unapproved, and those are, you know, illegal, but we're probably not ours because maybe it's something that's fixable. And then the rogue ones are those that are beyond hope. They're selling prescription drugs, are substandard, counterfeit, unapproved, whatever you want to call them. And they don't have a pharmacy license either at all or where they're supposed to. And those are what we send to registrars, and unfortunately that constitutes 90% of the market. So we have that largest database, and we work with a number of companies. Government agents are authorized to represent the Japanese Ministry of Health, the state boards as well, and again are endorsed on behalf of the Association of Boards of Pharmacy here today. Their members, the regulatory agencies in the U.S. and Canada, to basically serve as the liaison to notify you about rogue internet pharmacies if you're a registrar. What I wanted to do, and inform up in stages, so it's, wow, this is unfortunately blocking actually what I wanted you to see. I think the left. so I'll have to sort of tell you what is behind text that was supposed to transition out. But you have Xanax and Meridia and Viagra and a number of drugs. And there are three problems with this website, just to provide you with an anatomy of a rogue internet pharmacy. And by the way, I intentionally did not include my name because I didn't want it to look like I was, you know, calling anybody out. There are basically three things wrong with this. First, you can see here that it is offering what's called an online consultation. What that is saying is that you can get these medicines without seeing a doctor. Now, some of these websites will say, oh, we have an online doctor. That is almost nowhere legal. Yes, the word almost is in there. We are aware of the rare exceptions where that is legal and legitimate, but it's hardly anywhere around the world, and certainly not for these kinds. The same is not requiring a prescription. Number two, ship to almost every country. It's not possible to have a pharmacy license in every country. And in basically every country, with rare exceptions that don't really play into this, drug importation is not legal. So you just can't import from a place that's not a licensed pharmacy, for example. So this is the classic situation where we would call something a rogue internet pharmacy. And with the deaths, the hospitalizations, and the medical problems that we've seen, these are the acts on the part of the internet pharmacy that leads to that problematic overdose. The unintended side effect of a drug, because you don't have that medical supervision as is required. So the next slide. So these come from law enforcement, and when you actually go and look at some of internet pharmacies like this, this is what it acts like when they have done seizures and investigations. And I think the slide speaks for itself. These are the websites that will even post a forged pharmacy license. This is what you get when you really get there. And the big problem here is you don't know what's in the drugs because it's outside of the closed chain of commerce. Next slide. I'll belaboring the point. These are real victims, real death. They are not the only ones, but it's just important to keep in mind, you know, this is a serious matter because it does have real consequences. So one of the things that we have tried to do over the years in working with registrars and try to understand, how can we make this as easy as possible for them? Because, you know, our understanding has been, you want to know that a complaint is accurate. You want to know that the person or the entity you is accountable for that information. You want to know where you can go to understand the problem better. And I think you also want to know that the process is possible. And we're certainly sensitive that the use and the compliance process is in many ways a burden on registrars and registries. So what we've tried to do, work out processes and systems that will hopefully make it as possible for you. Now, one important point, and I think this is why we have really tried to say, when you look at the domain name registrar community as a whole, full of really good, responsible actors that are taking voluntary compliance very seriously. This line represents, one of these is a dot, it's a domain name registrar, and what we've seen is that about 10 registrars have about 50 rogue internet pharmacies out of, and I'm consolidating accreditations, about 900 companies or so worldwide. That have a vast majority of registrars, and I see many in the room today, have done a fantastic job about saying, yeah, you know, we don't want this on our platform. I'd like to find a way to do it, to take care of this. And, of course, we're continuing to try and engage and say, what can we do to help? So in terms of how we do things on our side before you get information from us, not an automated process. I mean, it is to identify the worth. But we always have three analysts, internet pharmacy, agree that it meets our definition of rogue, agree on the illegality before it goes to a registrar or a registry. So that's an important mechanism to make sure we're accountable, make a mistake, and hopefully you can trust the process. Screenshots, we're there to answer questions that come up. And we're really focused, especially on number one. 99% or more of our notifications to domain name registrars involve internet pharmacies selling prescription drugs without requiring a prescription. That's not legal. We have an appeals process. It also involves the sale of substandard and unapproved, not having the right pharmacy licenses. In basically every case, we're going to be doing all three of these things. Next slide. So, and how it works on our end is we verify that activity, and, you know, we draw a distinction between when should something go to the domain name registrar and when is it something else that should go to the provider or so forth. And the line we draw there is if the primary purpose, basically the only thing the domain name is doing, is being used to sell prescription drugs illegally, then we have obviously other cases where, you know, there's other activity going on. We include an explanation of what the problem is. The registrars end and lock the domain names, and then we have an appeals process. And what that is, try to take the work off your plate, if you'll let us do that, and send the domain name registrant to us. We explain the problem. No, I'm operating legitimately. It's a very simple question. Please provide us your pharmacy license in the jurisdiction. Again, is a consistent legal standard worldwide. And we've never had a case where they've been able, any legitimate internet pharmacy should be able to do that. So we feel like having that appeals process and back and forth is a way to help, you know, enhance that flow of information, be informed. But that is the way that that process works. We never had a successful appeal, which is as it should be. So again, we really appreciate everything that this community has done. It does save lives. We talk to the families sometimes, and I can tell you that what you do is really important. So thank you very much. And
back.
Thanks. Right. So I was asked to say a couple of words, and welcome, by the way, to Ireland, to those of you. I've been involved, and my company has been involved with Aesop EU, and part of what I've been trying to do is help them to have a better understanding of what we actually can't do, and trying to help and that, you know, we sell domain names at no idea, but other things are things that we might be able to do. Also, my own company has been working very happy with that. You know, it's something, the work they're doing, ultimately, it's down to something very, very simple, safety. I mean, it's the idea of allowing somebody to sell a drug that ends up killing somebody. My own company, our philosophy wouldn't, it just wouldn't. They're not asking us to do anything crazy, not all the time. So I'd say, you know, talk to them.
From the registrar community to the registry community, we've got Marty.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is the first time I've had a chance to talk to help you out. Our member boards do one thing. Regulate the distribution and dispense. The moment they walk out the door of a man, all the way to the point where that drug is handed to our role. And so I think it's obviously a pretty natural. Been at it now for a while. I mean, since 1990, doing it on our own. Since 1999. So, you know, we have a vested interest in, but, well, I'll talk about it now. So, like Dodd Pharmacy, we're the registry operator for Dodd Pharmacy, and what are we trying to accomplish? Well, we've had challenges with our accreditation programs. Search in Google, type in online AdWord program, the results around that are going to be and around since around 2011. So, we have a kind of historical context regarding our role in the space and how our programs are leveraged. So, these seals are fantastic. Door to this room is probably easy to explain and why they may not work when it's all said and done. From pulling a patient away from the website, verify that website. What if, I love it because it's the extension of that, but it's in that stream. We are a tool in this fight. And, you know, there's going, you know, we're dialogue. We're trying to work through what everybody, our role in this. Let's come up with a solution to work. Just real quickly, run it. They're coming to us first, they being the registrar. Very same thing we've been doing for 16 years, doing it with Dodd Pharmacy. So we're rolling through all this, doing it to determine that we've got a valid license, you're offering a valid prescription, all the things that are mobile. So not only are we doing it, and you're creating relationships with health regulators around first by creating the relationship with Hong Kong Authority, that with countries all over the world. So I'd be remiss, and I don't want to get off topic, but I want to kind of help maybe even set the stage for the step in new prescriptions and refill out. But the future of online pharmacy is going to, the ability of those records is taking shape. That with the online pharmacy that's already going, expansion of the scope of practice for pharmacists as well, and the fact that we're seeing pharmacy as a healthcare, up to point out, you know, as the internet, consider what that means from a regulatory perspective, and I'm going to expect it. I'm telling you, they're going to at some point. And regulators are probably stage for some exciting part of dovetailing with the innovation that's going on. That's all I've got, and we'll answer questions at the end.
Slide, please. So I've been standing on the sidelines, but I know a lot of you and appreciate being part of this community to talk about some of the work that the private sector, nonprofit communities are doing, and also talk a little bit about what government's been heard about, sort of how you can be part of the solution. I think an important message is, you know, this is not us coming to the registrar community saying you have to, because you can't alone, right? We all have a role to play in this. So I represent an organization that reflects a number of healthcare, nonprofit organizations, pharmacists, pharmacies, universities, academics, sort of the healthcare side of the equation, U.S. and the EU and in Asia on this issue, and we've been around since 2009. So we've been trying from the healthcare side of the community to figure out what we can do, and we'll talk a little bit about that, and then how we all work together. And we've heard from, you know, registrars and registries and the internet commerce companies and legislators, and so really want to just understand more about this community and how we can collaborate on some of the actions that we're already taking. So next slide, please. So what are the NGOs doing, non-governmental organizations? You've heard from CSIP and Mike Isles, ACU, and certainly me at ASAP, global and nonprofit organization. So what are we doing to talk about consumer awareness? I mean, this is a major issue, and consumers don't know. One of the reasons I passionately is my sister was a victim of an online disease. You know, fortunately, she did not die. And I was working on this issue at the time. So completely ironic. It wasn't my motivation to get involved in the issue. People would say, oh, you're inspired by your sister's story and you started a nonprofit. Actually, no. Actually, I had already been working on this issue. And I intrinsically and ironically, she was taking medicine from an online drug. She didn't know herself. I'm her sister. So I failed in my consumer. Really gave me a further interest in saying consumers everywhere, your own family members, your doctors, as Marjorie said, everybody needs to understand the problem with 97% of those websites that look legitimate. So what are we trying to do from the nonprofit community to raise awareness? Savvy internet consumers, because I buy vast majority of my things that I purchase on the internet. I love shopping, but I think consumers don't understand that there are websites that are legitimate and there are websites. So it's part of our job from the nonprofit community to make sure that we are raising that. So we've done that in a couple ways. This year, ASAP Global launched a consumer awareness campaign, mostly targeting the United States, just for resources. We had to focus in, but targeted. We hit 74 million people with 2 month dates. We ran Times Square ads in the U.S., in New York City with CSIP and ASAP. You'll see those here, there. And we also are running a free continuing education program for pharmacists in collaboration with the medical and pharmacy boards in the United States. That's a program we hoped that we launched in the U.S. this year, but it's a model we would like to export to other economies as well, because certainly doctors and pharmacists as frontline caregivers, their consumers and their patients understand, you know, when you're buying more to make sure you're buying safely. Or to Marty's point, you can now buy that pharmacy. So I think there's a lot of ways that doctors have a very important role to play in this problem as well. We're reaching out to them and collaborating with the medical boards and the pharmacists in the U.S., also now in the EU and Asia. So another thing that we've been able to do with partners like CSIP, Google, and others is do advertising campaigns right at the source of search. So instead of doing big public service announcements where or a media that we've done also this year, those are important tools, but only part of the problem, because when I'm buying online, I'm actually using the internet and I want to have real-time information that's accessible and helpful to me. We've been able to partner with the folks at Google and Yahoo and Bing to be able to make sure that we are seeing the right ads at the right time. Got the CSIP Google ads up there. You know, this has had a ton of success, right? I mean, 22 million impressions in 1 month, over a million. You know, people are clearly searching on the internet for medicine. So this is a resource that people can say, okay, if I'm actually going to type in medicine, at the right here, it says buy from safe online pharmacies, safemedsonline.org. That directs you to CSIP's website where you can have more information about how to buy. Great public-private partnership that you did with a nonprofit organization. Make sure that these consumers have real-time information. Also with Microsoft Bing's ad down here, PSAs, great tangible things that nonprofit community can bring to patients. So we're also pleased to announce that we're doing this also now in the EU with Mike Isles organization. We're starting to launch that. It's a little bit more complicated in the EU because you have a lot more languages here. And so we're rolling this out country by country, but we've just launched this program here in the EU, also working with Google to do search engine advertisements at the point of search. And so you can see, you know, type in Italian pharmacy, get an advertisement. Next slide, please. So, you know, speaking about working in different jurisdictions, I've mentioned, you know, work in Asia, we work in the EU, and we work in the United States. We do a lot of work with internet commerce companies, as I mentioned, but we also try to work governments and other nonprofit organizations in these jurisdictions. So just some images to reflect that we understand there are laws that are going on. The common logo is a new law that's here as part of the falsified directive. So we are working with member states to help them respond to the law that they have to educate consumers about internet pharmacy, trying to help provide tools and solutions to even lawmakers. They have to implement laws and help protect their own citizens. Ad campaigns, as I mentioned, and other consumer announcements. We've run YouTube videos. I mean, you name it, we're trying to report out both to the healthcare community, as I mentioned, as well as to regulators and law enforcement themselves. So just some examples. Next slide. The next slide, if it were on, would talk about government actions and why government are the solution too. You know, as we mentioned, nonprofits have a role to play, but another important trend that we're seeing is that has a stake in this. And so I just got back, Marjorie and I were in the Philippines earlier this year to meet with the Asia Pacific Economic Cooperation, member, 28 member economies of APEC, to do a 2-day workshop on internet pharmacy with healthcare authorities. So a number of economies, 19 economies, were present at a workshop. We sat down in rooms much like this, you know, with relations services trying to say, what's going on in your country? How can we help? Nonprofit, you know, do you need advertisement? Do you need to understand what internet companies are doing? Do you need to understand what healthcare companies can do? How can we tackle this together? And you're seeing globally regulators and member health organizations say, we want to be part of the solution, but we just don't know what to do.
Something that was very interesting that we saw in Asia in particular when we walked in the door was, why aren't your companies fixing this for us?
And I think a lot of what we're trying to do is help facilitate. They can't solve the problem alone. And so, again, you know, where our boards, we were modeled after the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. That was the first collaboration you saw by private sector companies to solve a global problem. Basically, unequivocally, people said, exploiting children and child pornography is wrong. We can agree on that. The prescription drug issue has become that. It's, you know, we're endangering patient lives. It's wrong. I know there's a million different voluntary initiative issues and other, you know, causes that we're also looking at, but where we've been able to really make headway is, again, on the public health issue. And a lot of what we're trying to do, because it is sort of the first of its kind in terms of collaboration with governments, is be facilitators of the dialogue so that, and I know it sounds terrifying in some ways to sort of stick your toe in the water and start, you know, conversing with, negotiating with, whatever it is, but again, what our organization is designed to do, both in the EU and in the US, our organization is really to try to help navigate all that and to facilitate the conversation. And again, our board members, GoDaddy, Rightside, Newstar, have also had their names on the face of a lot of the consumer education that's happening, which is, again, worldwide through Google. And one other thing I wanted to add on the ads that we're doing is we know that consumers do want good information because our click-through rates are actually double an average ad that you see on search engines. So we're getting higher click-through metrics than you see on most any kind of advertising happening on the internet, which was very telling to us. That said, okay, people do care. It isn't, people are blind.
I think Marjorie raised an important point, which is what do governments need to know about this? So oftentimes, and we found this in the US to be true as well, where you'd go to, you know, a US government agency and they'd say, well, wouldn't it just be easy if Google, or shouldn't just they just stop the payments or just shut them down? And we understand that's not the way this is going to work. You know, everybody has a role to play, and there's only certain things that people can do based on either the existing laws, conditions, certainly what consumer awareness can happen. And so we all have a role to play in this. And so we're trying to be part of the solution by going to governments and saying, here's what we know is, here's the principles of participation that some companies are doing, some good organization, good work from NGOs, awareness, but let's help all work together on this. So I used this slide to say G8's been very focused on this issue as well. EU, as I mentioned, has the Falsified Medicines Directive, new law that requires some regulation of internet pharmacy activity. Asia Pacific Economic Cooperation down there at the bottom, with 28 economies focusing on this issue in a multi-year, five-year program, culminating in a workshop just last month. So there's a lot done. Interpol, I know there's some folks in the room here from Interpol, and since CSIP was part of the Interpol solution, I'll have Marjorie talk a little bit about the Interpol work going on and their government actions.
So our collaboration with them has come in the form of Operation Pangea, which is an annual, essentially a sting operation targeting specific sites and tracked. And a lot of this is trying to get to that heart. I know there's a lot of criticism and people question, well, where does it ever end? To what end? It's sort of a whack-a-mole, and this is part of that solution set. It's trying to find the heart of a lot of this criminal activity and shutting it down, which, by the way, we also find leaks into other areas well beyond prescription drugs. So we annually participate in and helping stop, block, shut down, whatever it is that they ask our companies to do. It's been a really amazing thing, but it doesn't take a lot of time. It's about a one-week operation, and it's super targeted. And so we get to get a lot of bang for our efforts, and we've seen amazing, amazing metrics. $81 million, U.S. dollars worth of products that were seized last year alone, 156 arrests, 429 investigations. I will allow you to read the slide yourself. I don't need you to read it for. I need to read it for you. But the point is that we have found small but very effective ways to be able to get good reach and really help on the problem solving. John Horton's obviously also been integral in this, as have EU member countries as well. But this is part of, again, how we are there as a facilitator between Interpol and our companies. Again, going to hopefully streamline a lot of those relationships and tasks. Okay, next slide, please. We're going to keep going. And by the way, we can make these slides available to anyone who would like to have them after the conference. Just for fun, weekends, bring it home to your families. Exciting take home from slide, please. So we're going to wrap up so we can actually take questions. And I know we had some questions come in, but I think the key thing that we would like is a really subtle message, which is to join us. No, but sincerely, we, in all of our different capacities, we will be here days, would be more than happy to sit down and answer any questions you have, help problem solve. I mean, we, on our board, it's been really an honor, frankly, to be part of the work that we do, because I get to see, the registries and registrars are unique space, because you guys compete and work with each other at the same time. It's taken me years to kind of understand the dynamics. But bringing all the other member companies that we had on our board together as well was a little bit of a crazy feat. But we've seen how they've benefited from sharing best practices and really understanding how they're problem solving behind the scenes. And so, again, we want to continue to do that in this space and in whatever way we can. So Mike Iles, obviously, he's the head of the EU, Alliance for Safe Online Pharmacies EU, and wears many, many hats, both in a legal capacity as well as the patient care groups, John Horton, and I'm Marjorie Clifton, and obviously Marty as well from NABP, and Melissa Madigan in the back from NABP. So part of many solution sets, and we're open to answering questions. I know there were a few that came in through the webinar, so we're happy to answer those as well. Yes, ma'am.
With all the medication that you seized, are they all prescription drugs only, or they are non-prescription for the counter?
I'm going to address one piece of that, and I'm going to let John address the last. The interesting thing is when we started this work about 5 years ago, it was a very different kind of medication than we're seeing now. It was a little harder to sell, you know, Viagra problem, but now it's interesting because it's moved to life-saving medications, chronic illness medications. So we've seen the shifts following the waves of basically how people maintain illnesses, but they're life-saving, and that's what's been a real shift. It's about 78%, is that right? About 78% of the medications that are being sold on these sites are life-saving medications, or that we saw on the other in that lab. But
thanks, Joyce. So yeah, it's mostly prescription drugs. There's an emerging problem with what we call designer drugs, highs. They call them legal highs sometimes. Really been mostly prescription drugs, occasionally medical devices. Too. Fun ad the other day for somebody selling used. You can't do that. So there's a few things like that. But.
Are labeled as dietary supplements, but they have active pharmaceuticals. So I think there was a just recent example of a player overdosing on some medicine that was labeled as a dietary supplement, and he unfortunately died, but took a lot of dietary supplement that actually had active pharmaceuticals. So another issue that we see.
Just a follow-up. Do you mind? Okay. All the players on the internet, they must have bought those medication from vendors, manufacturers. Will you be able to identify those suppliers?
Sure.
I think those are the source of the problem.
Sure. So we really need to have a multifaceted solution. Really good point. I mean, obviously, from I think accountable, and as we saw on the slide, you know, not generally going to be the legitimate. Sure. Real prescription drugs are sometimes sold without a prescription. Often, what we've seen is, you know, when you so it's not even really a registered manufacturer, and in fact, the source of the drugs, it goes through 5, 7, 9. It all just runs cold. Even the seller doesn't know.
Hi, Liz Finberg, PIR. A comment and then a question, I may. So I noticed that, I think, John, you referred to this earlier as an abuse issue. From a registry perspective, at least from PIR's perspective, we would say this is not an abuse issue. It's a content issue. For us, abuse with a capital A means something that threatens the security and the stability infrastructure of the internet. So farming, phishing, malware, botnet, spam, what have you. I would view, and I do view this as a content issue. So we would require a court order before we would disable a website based on a request. And then my second question is, if I understand correctly, the process would look something like you'd report it to the registry, and then we could hand it off you to say to the person, please provide us a copy of your license.
Yeah, sure.
If we were to disable, and it happened to be one of the 10%, according to your statistics, pharmacies that are legitimate, and we were to be sued, is there an avenue for indemnification?
Yeah, so let me answer the second question first about that, and then I'll get back a lot in this community. So first, indemnification, we can often get there. We have done that in a few. I asked our in-house counsel before I came out here, I said, can I talk? And I said, hey, it's a really important question. Fraud and insurance, we've never had a registrar. So, you know, hopefully we'll be able to, well, we will practices to make sure that we protect our partners. In the said, we have generally gone to the registrar, and the reason for that is because the registrar is the one directly interacting. So that doesn't mean that we don't also work with registries, but usually our that we look at it in the context of a violation. So, I'd love it to be happy to talk about it, but our general practice has been first to focus on the register. So, on the content side of things, you know, we've heard this phrase, hey, I think about that is, first of all, I agree, needs to or possibly can police the domain name that comes in. I mean, when the domain name is registered, you know what it's going to be used for. It could be cheapshoes.com, you know what content that's going to point to. But so side of it, I think, is I think it you can have a reactive policy. And what I mean by that is, you know, viable information, as we try to provide, that quality of crime. I think there's a landscape that we've seen over the last few years. You know, it's been in the news. Google job with this, and, you know, they're one of our clients. There was a little incident in 2011 where they paid a fine. Paid to settle, you know, an indictment. And, you know, I guess what I'd say about that is, I don't think you have to go out and actively look at every domain name. Gosh, you know, if we contact you, we provide you the evidence, actually trying to help you so that you don't have the stuff.
Just to make a, I think there's a nuance there. So it's not my position that you're asking us to look at every phone. But even simply a report, so you report and you say this is a bad website. We're not a court of competent jurisdiction. We don't weigh evidence. We don't make judgments about who's right and who's wrong. It's really beyond the scope of our remit as a registry. And my, again, curious, I first of all, I think this is a fabulous initiative, and from a substantive standpoint, I'm with you. From a registry operator standpoint, it's very difficult. But in terms of obtaining a court order, surely, the trademark constituency has this down to a science. I mean, they are able to go to court and get TROs like that. Something like this would clearly meet the standard for a TRO. And if you serve us with a court order, we will act on it immediately. So I'm curious why that's not, or is it a part of what you do, and is it a matter of scope or scale?
Yeah, so it is in part a matter of scope and scale. I mean, part of the best answer to that is to take a look at how, you know, most of the, I will concede, you know, from our perspective, there has been a, but, you know, the fact of the matter is, the VAT is able to work out a system where they say, okay, you know, I understand. The illegality is so obvious, and the danger is so imminent. In these cases, there is a way for us to take action. I can comply with writing. You don't have to have a court order. In 2012, I think. And so, you know, the vast majority of the community is voluntary standards. And what we've tried to do is we've tried to find the way to present, wrap up the answer to the question is, you know, any complainant, legit script, any government agency, high burden of evidence to present to a registrar or a registry, as the case may be. That's on us. But in the case of prescription drugs, it's different to establish that somebody is selling prescription drugs, the burden pharmacy license upon request. There's no jurisdiction in the world where there's just a right by a government, and that's for patient safety. And so that burden shifts. I think that's an important concept. That concept is a way of having verifiable information, processes in place, and just through online.
Getting it down to a science to get a court order, and I can just add that we had a recent meeting with the Department of Justice and a number of different authorities, and they essentially said, we're going back to the internet companies to ask for you to, again, do this voluntarily because we cannot keep up with the bureaucracy, our agencies, to keep getting court orders. Just the bureaucracy, we could get them. It's just too hard to keep it going. So it is definitely not down to a science. Just wanted to add that it's very difficult, even though it's the internal bureaucracy of the authorities. It's not about proving it and demonstrating it. It's that just the red tape.
Ozan Shahin, for the record, from Arkham Policy Development Department, and we have one question and one comment in the chat box. Question comes from Dan Rogers, Paragon Internet Group Limited. Is the sheet available for remote participants? And the comment comes from Shweta Escher, Redix. Please provide soft copies of all these documents, if possible.
Sure, and let's work together afterwards to get that on the record, and then it's also available on our website, legitscript.com. There's a try to update that every year.
Thank you. I'm Rob Hall with Momentous, and I don't want to get into the debate of whether it's content or not. I think it clearly is. I'm with you, but I'll leave that aside, and I'll try and give some help, what I think might be very helpful to some registrars. In all your presentations, we see a lot of inflammatory. Yes, we agree. People dying is a bad thing. There's also millions of people around the world being helped because they can afford medication. So I fall into that class of licensed pharmacies in Canada, legally buying. John, you know, you claim illegal because they don't have a license where their ship started segregating your stats slightly. You know, KitchenAid Mixmaster pictures, I think most people find a way to deal with that. But the fact when it becomes jurisdictional is where you lose a lot of our sympathies. Oh, the pharma companies can charge more in the U.S. than they can in Canada because the U.S. Canada can. And, you know, this is an industry in Canada that's very widely supported by the Canadian government. So I think if you were targeting at different levels, as opposed to using the words of it's illegal and inflammatory and not licensed in both jurisdictions, you might have far more saying, look, let's target the ones that are making counterfeit, opposed to the ones that are selling at different commercial levels and pissing off.
So, sorry if I'm hogging the answers here. Let me clarify a couple of things, and thank you for those comments, Rob. 99.9 of what we submit to registrars, one thing in common. They sell prescription drugs without a prescription. So that is not the, you know, anything that the licensed Canadian pharmacies, which we'll come back to in a minute, are doing. That is...
Let's be clear.
I didn't say that.
American prescription crossing borders.
No, I didn't say that, Rob. I'm saying you don't have to see a doctor at all. I am saying that we verify that it is sold without a prescription. That is what goes to domain name registrars. And there's no jurisdiction that's legal. Now, some of the political issues you talked about, let me bookmark that, because what I don't want to do is get into a longer discussion about whether the drugs are really from Canada, which we can talk about that later. With some of our other partners, you know, they don't want that on their platform, the ad space and so forth. What we've tried to do is draw a clear line that I think the registrar community is comfortable with is, I mean, if you're selling prescription drugs without a prescription, I mean, I don't know how anybody can justify that. So that's what we've tried to do to help, hopefully, you know, registrars feel comfortable with it. And I'm definitely happy to meet afterwards or anytime. My phone line is open so that we can talk about anything we and you or other registrars walk through it and say, as I have in some cases, here's the test buy we did. These are prescription drugs.
John Crane, Chief SSR Officer at ICANN. I have a question on your numbers. You talked about 40,000 websites at any one time. Completely agree. I know how to do the advanced Google stuff. We find it all the time. Tens and tens of thousands of websites out there doing this. But that's not tens of thousands of names that are registered for abusive nature of stuff, whether it's content or not. So do you have numbers on the amount of names that you're passing off to registrars, the ones that are actually not the hacked university websites, of which there are tens of thousands just of those?
So, John, are you basically talking about unique domain names? Is that... So that's what we... I should clarify that. Yeah, so that's what we actually focus on. Even though there's a little bit of spam that we monitor, there's some very good organizations already doing that, like Spam House. So we're not really focused on the Spam House type. That's certainly part of it. Really is the... You know, whatever that domain name was that I showed you before. They're trying to have a stable presence in organic search. That's all of what we're talking about. Yeah. No, it is about, I would say, 35,000. Right now, the number is about 35,000. Yeah. Yeah.
Hello. I actually have a microphone.
All right.
Thanks. I'm Tim Smith from the Canadian International Pharmacy Association, and thanks. You know, we share a lot of the same concerns, certainly the same concerns for online. So what I'm going to say is more comment than it is question. Although I would say that, Marjorie, when you started off by talking about no number or no one right answer, happy to work with people to come up with right answers, but that's not a question. I just wanted, and this is more for everybody in the room, I wanted you to know that, you know, my members have been around for about 14 years now. We have an ongoing initiative where we identify websites that masquerade as being Canadian, that identify, and mostly as it relates to the SIPA certification mark. And I know there are concerns about certification marks being copied, which is why we go after it. So we are identifying rogue use or fraudulent bar seal on an ongoing basis and reporting that. And certainly trying to work with registrants and with registrars in order to make sure that sites that are making fraudulent get shut down or that the seal gets removed. And we also work with authorities. We share that with the Canadian Anti-Fraud Centre, which is a collaboration of the Ontario Provincial Police and the RCMP. So we're doing what we can at our end. And I just wanted you to know that there is sort of more than one model for safe online pharmacy. And if anybody wants to know more about that, they talk to us. We operate from licensed pharmacies. Dispensing is done by pharmacists. And it's a complete process. So I just wanted to share that with you. And
aside from your members who were under indictment for selling counterfeit drugs, right?
Well,
and the other one
I think that's a matter, and the indictment is a matter for the courts to determine. I don't think that's a matter for right now. But I also would want to clarify that our members and our association sells and serves individuals who come to us with a prescription for a 90-day supply of drugs. And what you're referring to does not
refer... Mark on that.
Yeah, and I think one of the key things that, you know, we're focused on, again, because, I mean, Rob, love to have you at my house to do this debate with my, you know, family members who are physicians, and there are a lot of organizations that are, you know, legitimately going back and forth and creating these in the U.S. because Canada has a good brand name. I mean, it is a positive Canada in terms of their brand, but obviously there's other implications. Our organizations are focused on the laws within the jurisdictions we're working. So for us, it's, you know, concentrating, again, what is black and white U.S. law or EU law, you know, not complicated at all with 35 member states, but trying to operate within that. James, you had something you wanted to ask?
GoDaddy, and also participant for CSIP, and we use Legit Script Services. Just wanted to kind of circle back to Liz's question regarding this being a content issue. It is clearly a content issue. And the way we've addressed that as a registrar is called it out in our terms of service, and then we made it a voluntary practice. And so I'm kind of looking to you, John, to say, can we continue to make this a voluntary practice? I understand you're never going to get 100% effective, but when you come to places like ICANN and start saying we need a global mandatory consensus policy enforced by Allen, you know, I think Allen, but your backstop for that last long tail that you demonstrated up there, where you've got, you know, the fifth, and I understand you can't mechanize it the way that you need to keep up with scale, but that's your guarantee. Now, building up on that from the guarantee is this voluntary organization. And I would also just, as a run up to Dublin, I don't know if you guys have heard, but a lot of non-pharmaceutical issue, downloadable things, and no one I know of is streaming. Okay, so, you know, how do we at least draw a line and say, this is a public health threat, this kills people, this costs money, this has a body, you know, and start to make some intelligent...
James, I mean, one of the things I'm interested in us trying to learn more about, because we did see, actually, through some of our registrars on board, a link to malware with a lot of the prescription drug sites as well. So layered upon that, there was also that issue. We don't have a measure of that right now, but I'm interested in it. And, you know, Staten Hammock from Right Side has had this idea of, you know, is there a way to do a scalability of grievances, of basically, in terms of these voluntary and these infringement, got Right Side right there. So you may have heard this before, but I thought it was a really interesting idea of sort of how do we delineate between all of these different, because we know you're getting inundated by a lot of these requests. And again, we're grateful for you all being here and willing to listen on this topic and, you know, and Alan for including us in ICANN in the ways that you have. So we're really grateful here to hopefully be collaborative and helpful, not mandating, but really just trying to, you know, find a way to be collaborative. Did you have something else you wanted to add, Michaela?
Just very, very, very briefly. Mandatory won't work. Voluntary means that you have a hope of working with those of us who handle a lot of CCTLD registrations, because Alan cannot force me to do a single thing with my CCTLD registrations, and that's a good thing.
Or anything else for that matter.
Well, Alan forcing any of us to do anything is always entertaining. But no, I mean, jokes aside, you know, if you leave us an industry to work independently, collaboratively, then things can get done in a way that might work. If you insist on pushing things so that it is either done at a legislative level or trying to pull ICANN into this, it really doesn't.
Thanks for those comments. Alan, you have something?
I was just going to put in an ad for, there's another session on Wednesday, a talk, which is going to deal with voluntary practices in a variety of contexts. So some of the people here are going to be on that panel. There are also going to be people, ways that other industries have used voluntary. Join us if you can.
Place to end, as we know we have another meeting that needs this room, but just on behalf of the community of people here, you know, ASAP, ASAP EU, CC, legit script. And I think there's a whole host of others, Black Knight, Right Side, GoDaddy, others that have said they're taking voluntary actions. We're here to say, you know, we want to be part of this community, want to work with you. So please, you have our contact information. Shoot us an email, find us, text us, tweet us. We are around to have further dialogue and look forward to working with you in the days ahead.